thank you so much for joining Dental Marketing Theory, a podcast by Gary Bird. In today's episode, Gary talks with Joshua Scott. Gary and Josh talk about the ins and outs of dental marketing and how to make the most out of your marketing dollars. As always, please make sure to like, subscribe, share, and leave a comment, as all of those things really help to get the word out about Dental Marketing Theory. Hope you enjoy today's show.
All right, Josh, we are live. I'm excited to have you on today. And we just had a really good talk about the gym. And you're looking good, my friend. And I wanted to kick this off in a way that I don't normally start the podcast. But before I do that, I just want to ask everybody, if you're listening right now, if you could just leave the podcast, if you're on social media or if you're on the podcast, any whatever streamer you're on, just go ahead and leave a review. And I know you're thinking right now, okay, continue, go on. I'm not going to leave a review. Please just stop and leave a review. These are all free. And if you could just do that for me, it really, really helps me out. So Josh, I want to quickly describe your business, and I want you to tell me what I get wrong about it. Okay. And so how I see your company is you guys are all about telling other people's stories, and you're amazing at it. Right. And you go in and you really learn about the dental offices that you're working with, and you pull out their story, and then you show it across the internet in a lot of different ways. Video and web, social, and you really tell their story. So that way, when a new patient or even an existing patient lands there, they really get more of an intimate feel of what that practice is really all about. So what do you think about that? Did I get it? Did I nail it? Or am I a little bit off, or did I miss anything?
No, man, you're pretty right on. You know us well, and we've had lots of conversations. I mean, we call ourselves Dentistry Story-Driven Marketing Agency. And what that means is, Gary, I mean, marketing in its basic sense is really about communication. It is magnifying a message. And what I think what dental marketing has done really well in the past 5 to 10 years is the analytics, the data, the direct response kind of tactics, even going from like direct mail, you know, like 10, 15 years ago, that was a direct response tactic. People get it in their mailbox. It wasn't Google direct response like that second, but it was the next day or the next week or the next month they're calling. We've done good at that, but I think sometimes we've missed the message behind it. Mm-hmm. And what we're bringing to the table is, man, I actually think it's better marketing because it's true. It's authentic. We're not trying to make up a byline or a tagline that's sexy just to get clicks, or, hey, this score's better, so let's go this way. It's about, hey, this is us. This is how we approach the community. This is why you should choose us, and putting that out there.
Yeah, I like what you said there about the community. What are you seeing in the dental space right now as far as people really being engulfed in their community, and how do you integrate that into the story?
Yeah, man, it's a good question. I mean, dentistry is still a local business, you know? And even some of these things of like your location, your signage, your like how are you involved in the community? Maybe you are the sports sponsor. Great. Like, you know, but do that, be that person. Maybe you're the local farmers markets and art, you know, sponsoring art events and projects going on. So I think that component is always an important part of the conversation around dental marketing. But Gary, you know what I think is really interesting right now? A lot of the practices, and I would love your insight on this too, as I'm looking through practices across the nation right now, I don't know that I'm necessarily seeing a marketing problem per se. What I'm seeing is a capacity problem, whether 100%. It's keeping teams like a full staff in there. Yep. Like if a practice could keep a full team and get new patients in the door, they could actually grow right now. The problem is most of them are having a capacity issue, but now we're having conversations around like a story-based web experience. It's not just for new patients, man. It's now a recruiting tool. Yes. You know, we're in this 100%. Like fierce competition, this landscape of competing on talent. Now your story is at a different level where we're like, okay, hey, we're trying to recruit people. Here's why you should choose us. So I think that's really interesting right now.
Yeah. So I actually have a stat around this that blows my mind. So before the pandemic, we told everybody, you got to get your new patients in within 48 hours. Right now, the average, and because we track that, right? So every new patient that's generated, we look at, okay, how long are you making that patient wait until they get in? right now we're somewhere between like 5 and 7 days on average. Yeah. That's just our clients. And then I've talked to other companies that track the different kinds of metrics, but similar, like wait times and things. Everybody's pushed out. So there's actually, and people don't believe me when I tell them this, there's actually an abundance of patients and not enough dentist or facility space to serve those, which is bad for business for companies like ours, because it's like, hey, we're marketers and things like that. But like, to your point, the opportunity is you need to really be on your game to be able to tell the story of why people should work with you. And there's an abundance of new patients right now, but there's a limited supply of dental assistants, hygienists, and dentists. And what I find interesting about this, Josh, is like, so if you go and talk to like any group or anybody who's trying to grow their practice, they're like, hey, I'm at one practice, I'm trying to go to 5 in the next couple of years. If they're at 5, I'm trying to go to 10. If I'm at 10, I'm trying to go to 20. If I'm at 20, I'm trying to go to 100. And some of that's going to be done through acquisition, but a lot of those acquisitions, how they grow those practices is by adding more associates. Well, when you do the math, like if everybody hits their growth goals, there's not enough people, there's not enough dentists coming into the market and hygienists coming into the market. Now, where I think that will turn is now hygienist and all the pay has been boosted, right? Because of inflation and a limited supply. So you have a boosting of that. So now you're going to have people coming out of high school or maybe a little bit older going, maybe I should be a hygienist. This looks pretty good at, you know, $60 an hour, $70 an hour. So we'll get an influx. I think we'll get an influx of people coming into the industry, but that's still 2 years, 3 years away, right? Like that's not going to happen overnight. So that's my perspective on it. How are you guys seeing it and tackling that?
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, man. It's kind of a new day when we're facing that. And most practices I'm walking into now are having some like more in-depth conversations with. They need to add another hygienist. They need to add another doctor into the mix, but they can't. But they're still trying to replace the one hygienist that they lost 8 months ago, or the one associate that they lost. Or I'm like, hey, it's time to finish out this like 7th op or whatever, or turn your office into an op. Like it's time. And they're like, can't even keep the team. Like most weeks we're at 80%. So like I can't even. So I think the opportunity is there. And so we're talking about that competitive advantage of how do you get through this competitive landscape. And I think that conversation of story, like the practices that we work with that have been doing this for 6-7 years, were so much better positioned coming through the pandemic, even retaining team members, right? Recruiting like in the season. So it's not like the money is an important part for sure. Yep. You know, like you got to compete on that. But I think that competitive edge a lot of times can be that story, your why, the team culture, like what you're
Well, that goes back to culture. Culture is really, it's hard to build so maybe let's talk about that. So how do you build a story around somebody who's maybe doesn't have a great culture, maybe doesn't, and you don't have to call anybody out, but just like you go to somewhere and they are a dumpster fire, right? And they don't treat their employees well, and people don't want to work there. How do you build like a good story or a compelling story around that?
Well, dude, that's a tough question, man. Cause you know, at the end of the day, it's like dentistry, there is a part of dentistry where it will grow despite the culture. And you know that. But
well, cause the margins, at the same time, like, the margins are so good, right? Like your margin, you're going to win. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the success rate of dentistry, there are sometimes why, I know some doctors where it's like, they think they're a really good business operator. And I'm like, you're in a really good, like,
the stats on that? It's literally the opposite of all other businesses. So if you and I went into business together, Josh, on pick any business, 90% chance we fail. Dentistry, it's 90% chance you succeed.
Right. Yeah. So there's some of it where I'm like, I think it's not good, bad, right, or wrong. It's just a self-awareness to know that you are in a climate that is conducive to you growing a good business regardless. So I think you have to like be on guard even more, like try even more, like, am I building a good culture? Mm-hmm. Am I a good operator? Those things. So, so I think there's that. I forget what your question was now?
Well, my question was, and I've dealt with this before too. And again, I don't want you to call anybody out, but it's like, when you go in operationally or culturally, they're not set up the way that they need to be. Like, how do you deal with that? Do you have a hard conversation with them, or do you try to just finesse it the best that you can and make it, you know, the best situation you can, or how do you approach that?
Yeah, man, as a team, honestly, we try to be as non-judgmental about that as possible. And really we're working with people. This is like a first engagement, right? So it's like a first, maybe second date when we engage. And so, you know, down the road, we end up in some of these situations where it's like, this, they're just not good at running a business, and it's obvious now. And so they've got the turnover, and they're like, hey, I can't use any of the photography because 90% of my team's not here anymore. And we're like, you know, okay. But at the same time, like, we always give people the benefit of the doubt too. And I think sometimes, you know, Gary, I mean, sometimes it's like, if you want to switch, turn that around, sometimes it starts with, let me stop and really come back to like why I started this and why we're here and what I want the team to believe. And so sometimes it's a helpful exercise to even turn that around a little bit or get it back on track.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I've seen both sides of it, right? I've seen good cultures, you know, get turned upside down. I've seen people who had poor cultures and then turn it around. And something I actually, we were just having a conversation around with somebody else I was working with was, you know, now you have a little bit of a different dynamic where you have people who have multiple locations. And maybe they have like a DSO, and the DSO has good culture, but maybe at the office level they don't. And trying to bridge that so you don't have, you know, different cultures, different values, things like that. So I find that all fascinating. So walk me through, like, when you're talking to a dentist, like if I was a client, what's the first thing that you start with? Are you starting with them on, hey, let's get your brand right, hey, let's get your core values, and then building around that? Or are you starting from more of what they are looking for from maybe a different angle? Where is your starting point?
Yeah, most people engage us on more the brand or the web experience side, for sure. That's what they're coming to us. And we've, over the years, have gotten a ton of attention for our websites or our web experiences and the creative there. We have a discovery process in the first couple of weeks where we're going to learn about their values. We've got like a tool, we call it a brand creator. It's a little bit of a like fun 8 exercise workbook. We've got a style discovery online thing that they walk through. It helps us lock in on their aesthetic direction. So it's about 3 or 4 kind of pieces of homework they do in our discovery phase. And really that's about us discovering their story. Like, step one, we have a 3-step process. Step one, we call it discovering the story, working with them. I'm not trying to necessarily create it for them. I'm trying to pull it out.
Know?
And some of these where it's been like 20 years, they're like, man, I sat down and did this and I had to stop and think again. Like, why did I start this? Like, what was some of that? And so that part's cool. Other, you know, then you got startups that, man, they're just, it's so visionary and idealistic that I love it. You know, and I'm like, in 5 years, so much of this will change, but like, let's go, you know, let's go in this direction. And then you've got some people that have done this regularly and they're like locked in. They're like, nope, this is who we are. They can, you know, there's 6 values. They can just read them off. So it's about us discovering their voice. You know, like I said, we want to magnify that message. We want to get it out there. We want to tell it with authenticity. So
that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. I've actually watched you go through that with some clients before, and you guys, you do an amazing job at it. I love the way that you guys tackle that. So where do you think the future of dental marketing is going? Obviously, like you alluded to before, there's the direct response side, there's the lead generation side, you have branding, then you kind of have all these different like strategies in between there, right? There's a lot of different things that squeeze in between there. Where's the future of dentistry from your perspective?
Yeah, man. And you're talking specifically the future of dental marketing.
Yeah.
It's a great question. You know, I mean, I think I came into this from more of the brand perspective. Like I said, I think it was, when I started this company where we started our 9th year, I've been around dentistry for over 21 years. Wow. I've always been on the marketing side. So at some point, my story is I looked around one day and it was like, dental marketing sucks. And I didn't understand why. And I think I kind of came into it non-clinically, right? So I looked at the profession. I don't know. I always thought it was like innovating. It was inspiring. It's like this beautiful profession of humans serving humans. And yet when I looked at dental marketing, like, we were never telling that story. It was stock photos. It was clinical, you know, list of services. And
if you even had a website, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
There was a time in dental where it was like, no, we don't need websites. Like, I know everybody else does, but we don't.
Oh my gosh, man. I've been through like Websites are great, but it's a digital brochure. It won't get you new patients. To Facebook is great. It's a place to post some pictures of your team, but it won't get you new patients. To I've been through it all, you know? And so now it's just like, guys, you're missing the point. But yeah, so I always saw it as I wanted to change that message. I feel like dentistry deserved a better story. So I put together I had some really creative friends here in Columbus, Ohio, part of other agencies or design houses, brought them together. I was like, I got this idea, dental marketing. They were like, is that really an idea? And I'm like, no, I think this could be an idea. And man, I'll tell you, even recruiting now, like it kind of takes a minute because they come in, they're like, so this is dental marketing. I'm like, yes, pause for a second. Let me go through it. And then let's come back to that question. But I felt like the profession deserved it. And really just creating that level of respect. And even the public, we're 10 years ago, like we're in this space where it's like, what's happening with insurances? Are you going to take over the world, DSO growth, corporate yep. money, venture capital, all this stuff. And it's like all that is great. And it has its place, but at the same time, like private practice groups, everybody needs to be able to tell their story in a way that it elevates the public perception of what this profession is about. And so, that's kind of how I approach it. So you asked about the future and I went to the past, which is completely opposite. But I say that to go, man, I still think branding is such a big conversation. And I see my take on the DSO space is I'm watching everybody expand, and expansion is like number one priority, and as many locations as we can, and everybody, we're just doing this. At some point, all things being equal, we're going to have some groups that go, okay, branding is an important part. Like, how do we differentiate ourselves? And we've had some that have done that, but I don't think to the extent that we're going to see. And at some point, we're going to realize the biggest companies in the world are brand companies.
Yeah.
Coke, Apple, Amazon, Tesla, Nordstrom. So it's going to be the same thing in dentistry in the DSO space, man. At some point, the biggest ones are going to be the brands out there that have invested in that.
So let's talk to that, because I love this particular topic. And there's like two directions it can go, right? So you have basically like three different kinds of models out there on the DSO side. Like you have like the Aspen model, which is like, hey, we're Aspen and all these locations are Aspen, right?
Yep.
And then you have like the Heartland model. And the Heartland model is, hey, we have all these practices, but you don't know which practices are ours. They're all different. They're branded different. They're marketed different. Like you can't go identify all of Heartland's offices, right? Then you have Pacific, and Pacific's model is, hey, we have all these offices. They're all branded exactly the same, but they all have different names on the logo. But when you land on a Pacific site, it's the same as all the other Pacific sites, but they're individually laid out. They're not all tied together like the Aspen model. And those are all like three totally different approaches. But to your point earlier, dentistry is always local, right? So no one ever goes and says, no one ever wakes up and is like, oh, I want to, get a dental office like my gym. Because if you travel, you want a gym that's going to be everywhere, right? Yeah. But it's closer to like, maybe like a dry cleaner. Like when I go to my dry cleaner, I don't care that they have 500 locations. That literally doesn't help me zero. Like it doesn't impact me. So I'm really interested from a brand standpoint, like where do you, is there a better way of doing that? Is there the best way of doing that? Like I view it, right? And I'm sure there's other nuances that I missed in there. I'm just curious of like how you're viewing that.
No, I think you're completely right, man. Dentistry is local. So like the Heartland model works. Although I think what Heartland is going to have to think about, and they probably do, but like how do they integrate more into that community? If it is a standalone practice, right? It's usually built around a clinician's reputation, word of mouth, patient experience, all those things. So that's what they have to control as kind of some of their main marketing investments. Aspen has been, they have put the brand on it, but to be honest, I think we all look at Aspen. The reason they did that was to save money and to create this like big giant kind of, chain and whatever. And none of us really have an affinity towards that brand. I think there's some space in between. And I think, man, even as we're, maybe it's not even as patient facing, but it's more the value of the brand. So building that brand, the equity that that creates within that, depending on your exit goals, your long-term strategy. I mean, I know like right now we're, you know, we talk to kind of these mid-sized DSOs about the parent organization, the brand, and building out those websites and the messaging and all that, because some of them are coming to me going, hey, in 5 years, I'm gonna exit, or I'm gonna recap, or I'm gonna whatever. And I'm saying, hey, a branding project at X amount, man, you could probably get a 20X return on that in 5 years when you go to exit this, because the investors are going to look at that and go, these guys have their stuff together from that perspective. So I think there's even just that conversation of like, what's the long-term goal? Yes, it can be local, but I think there's going to be some big players on the national front that step up to go, hey, and you're going to see it in their valuation as well.
What model do you think that, like, if you were a dentist, what model would you, and you were in charge, you were like the CMO and you're part, you know, on the board, how would you build your DSO? You have 100 locations, like, and you built it from the ground up, so you can tackle it however you want. Like, how would you do that from a marketing standpoint?
Man, Gary,
have you thought about really it?
No,
that's a hard question.
It's a good question. I know myself, and I know I like building from the ground up. Like even, you know, this home we built 4 years ago, built from the ground up. The one before that, 17 years before I built that. You know, we're looking at some new office space in the next 18 months. And that's ideally awesome. I want to build something, you know, find a piece of land and build it. So I function better that way. Like I'm more of the visionary from the clean slate. Like give me a blank piece of paper.
Yeah.
Let me create versus I have trouble. Like when we were building this house, we were looking at other houses and maybe renovating and all that stuff. I don't know. I have trouble walking into an existing home and seeing how I can retrofit that to make me happy, you know?
Yeah.
And even from our team, like just building from the ground up. So it's not that it's good, bad, right, or wrong, but I would almost say I would probably go like majority de novo strategy. And it would probably be built around a brand that, you know, just knowing me, like it's going to be slick, it's going to be modern, it's going to be.
Is it going to be a local brand in each brand locally, or would it be a top down brand, or would it be DSO big brand and then local brand? Like, how would you do that?
Ideally, I would probably try to tie the DSO to the local locations in some way, maybe some variation of the brand, but it would. I got to put things in boxes.
Yeah.
Like if I was going to get in the dental practice space, I would want all my practices to look the same, function the same, be the same name, the same brand, and almost have like a global takeover strategy with it. But
that's what I thought. That's what I thought you would say. That's what I thought, because you can really control it. Right. And so, because then when you look at like, and I'm just riffing with you now. So it's like, you look at like the Heartland model, what they're done really well is like, cool, you want to be an owner doctor and you want to be a partner with us. You can build your brand however you want to build your brand. Right. But that doesn't, that takes away a lot of that control. And some brands are going to be ugly, right? Like they're not going to be as what you would want. So, I get both sides of it. That's really, really cool. I find it fascinating. And I think we'll find out in the future how people end up tackling this, right? Like we're going to see how it's going to fold out, because there's a lot of different ponies in the race. What are your...
Yeah, if I got down that road, I might rethink it if I got down that road. But for me, like I actually don't love complexity. It kind of gets me riled up. So everything in my life, it's very simplistic. And we were just talking before we got on about your workout routine, and you're like, I can't think about it. I got to like, boom, boom, boom. This is my stuff. And I'm the same way with business, man. I'm like, business is already massively complicated.
Yeah.
So like, why would we want to make it any more? So I actually probably try to, with my team, I have these like whiteboard piece of glass panels, and they tease me because I'm always like, oh yeah, hold on. I go up and I start drawing boxes, and they're like, everything's got to go in a box. I'm like, it does. Like there's systems, things move from place to place. This is structure. This is process. And I think that's also, one of my giftings is I try to bring simplicity to complexity. And so I would absolutely probably bring that into the dental space as well. Like it could be massively complex. I can't have it like that personally. It would keep me up at night. Yeah. So like, how do we simplify this?
Yeah. And it makes sense. Like that's how, and then moving outside of dental, when you move into these brands like franchise or things like that, that's what they do, is they make it really simple for you to be like, here, you come and make sandwiches. The brand's already taken care of. The marketing's already, everything's already ready to go. You just come and run and operate this local shop or this local location. And so that definitely, I think that makes it easier for people involved.
Here's one more thought, man. Cause I watched my brother-in-law's an orthopedic surgeon, and I watched mm-hmm. that space a little bit. Cause I feel like mm-hmm. it's 10 to 15 years in front of dentistry. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, like if you're going to go to an orthopedic group, well, if you're going to go to an orthopedic surgeon here in Columbus, Ohio, you're going to end up at a group, and there's about three of them now. And they've all consolidated, right? But like Orthopedic One is the big group, and they now have practices in basically every major suburb around the city. And so it's become this, and everything's very straightforward. Like if you've been to one of them, you've been to all of them, you know their systems, how they routine, how it works. And so I'm not saying dentistry is going that way, but I'm also watching that space because I feel like there's things. It's a roadmap. Like other professions have gone down that road. So I've watched the simplicity they brought with it. And look, like 10 years ago, there were still a lot of different orthopedic groups. So I don't know. I see like some of these models as it's driven by the expansion. And there's a lot of like, don't worry about it. Let's just put it all together. We'll kind of figure it out later type thing. Mm-hmm. And I think 10 to 20 years down the road, I think we're going to see more major big brands than we thought, because it's just going to create simplicity. It's going to create efficiency. We're talking millions of dollars of efficiency every year under a bigger brand versus a ton of different ones.
Totally. Yeah. I love that. So changing gears on you really quick. One of the things that you said that kind of sparked an idea in me is you said, when you try to bring in a new team member, right? And so you got this creative video person or this creative designer, and you're like, hey, we're doing dental. It like shocks people, right? And the only reason I laugh at that is because I've been through that before, right? Like many times where it's like, no, like just dental. And they're like fixing people's teeth. Yeah, like that's, you have a whole company built around that. And it's like, yep. And right. So people really get slapped around with that. And one thing that I've seen is that, so it's one thing for an agency, right? Where I've seen people really struggle is inside the DSOs, where they need to recruit for their team, which is even harder, right? So you're not recruiting for a marketing agency. No. You're recruiting for a DSO and the marketing arm of that DSO. And sometimes they'll have trouble even getting people to like apply. And like, it's just not the hot thing that people think they're getting into when they get into marketing or design and things like that. So I think it would be helpful if you kind of walk through, like, how do you have that conversation and how do you break down what your guys are doing to attract that top talent to be able to give the top results that you guys provide?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, the majority of our team are millennials. They're millennial creatives. I love that. I feel like one of my unique places in this world is leading creative millennials. And so, but I also know about millennials is they're very missional. They want the why. Most of them, I kind of joke, I'm like, most millennials will start their own business and their own nonprofit at some time in their life. And so you've got to know that. And so, you know, we give ours, we kind of have like pretty much a 40 hour work week. I mean, I'm dealing with creatives. I want them to have margin. I don't want them to be 50, 60 hours.
Yeah.
That being said, I'm also like, hey, your side hustle on the weekend is fine. Like go shoot wedding photography, go design for other projects. We've got one designer, he designs stuff for Netflix for cover images. And so, because it makes him a more valuable person, but it also feeds that outlet. I also know that our why as a company and the story and what they're buying into is also really, really important. And so, man, we always lead with that. And we always like, I mean, it's part three of our interview process. They sit down with me and it's very much like, let me tell you the why. Let me tell you like why this might be a good fit for you, what we're trying to accomplish, our mission in this space. And I kind of give them the history. And it's funny, man, because sometimes people, not people we're hiring necessarily, but maybe friends around me or people that know me, they're like, so you still doing that dental thing? I'm like, yeah, man, I'm still doing that dental thing. And they're like, you ever think about like, you know, something else? And
I get that.
It's funny because entrepreneurs, man, first off, we have this like ADD brain where it's like squirrel and we do something that like succeeds. And now we're like, ooh, what's next? What else could we do and apply money to and resources? I have to stay disciplined. I'm like, you know, in dentistry, whatever the number is, but I usually go with, there's 150,000 dentists in the country. 1% of that is 1,500 clients. we're not near that. I mean, that's a massive company.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, we have all kinds of space, guys. We could, you know, dedicate the rest of our life towards this road and probably we could never reach market saturation.
Our companies, we could take yours and mine's most wildest dreams, multiply them by 50, right? And we still wouldn't be serving the even close to the markets that we want to serve. And I look at it the same way. It's like, there's 200,000 dentists. Our why is we're passionate about helping people and practices grow. So we want to help our people grow first. We want to help their people, our clients' people grow second. And then we want to help the practices grow. And if our people are growing and their people are growing, then usually the practice will follow, right? Because we're the spear, we're the marketing. But if there's 200,000 dentists, let's say, you know, there's probably 20% of those that really want to grow and expand. So that's like our target market. That's a huge market, you know. And I know if you watch Shark Tank, it's like, that's a really small market. That's not big enough. But you can have a really successful business. And I get that all the time too, where people are like, oh, if you just go over into, you know, some other optometry, you can just double your business. And I'm like, it's not quite that simple, but I appreciate the thoughts. But one thing that you said is that you really focus on your why. What is your guys' why? What is your why?
It really, it's dentistry deserves a better story, to be honest. And we've got a tagline on our site. It's kind of, we call it the hook. It's your story is worth it. And that's how we approach every client. And I really believe that, man. Yesterday, Monday, our team meeting had everybody around the table. Well, multiple tables at this point. And, Monday was like a significant point for us. It was one of these like milestones, along the way. And type A personalities don't stop enough to kind of recognize that. And so I took some time and I said, look, I don't even know exactly, like, I can't put my finger on what's going on, but we had just made a round of hires. So, you know, we added like four people to the team, and some of that were very strategic, people and places that are going to create some growth. And so I just said, look, this is, at the end of it, we're doing this because dentistry needs our gift. And me as a person, man, I think in the last couple of years, you know, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, I've come to the point, it has seemed selfish at some point to go, the world needs my gift. But I think I've settled in that. Like, I have a gift to bring to the world. And I need to do that as authentically as I can. And it honestly makes the world a better place. And so when I speak and I'm on a stage, man, every single time, it's like, that's my main motivation, is like, I want to leave myself empty and give you that gift because it's needed.
Yeah. No, that's really good. I like that.
And as a team, I'm like, the dentistry needs our gift. It needs it as authentically as we can deliver it, because we're improving it, we're making it a better place. And so that's our why.
I love that. And yeah, you know, it's interesting, because sometimes I always tell our team, like, guys, you know, we do dental marketing, right? So it's like, we're not saving people, things like that, but it's important. Like, it's livelihoods and things like that. But we often, like, it's like we're creating a digital product that doesn't actually exist, right? Like, if I said, show me all your work, you pull up a website on your computer, right? Like, if the power goes out, you can't even show all the stuff you've created, right? All the videos, all that kind of stuff. And with dentistry, I look at the dentist and I'm like, how do you do that? Like, you just made they made this physical smile to someone who couldn't smile and really fix somebody's problem. And the other thing is, like, it's crazy technical, right? Like, you not only have to be gifted smart, you also have to have the coordination to be able to do that, which it's not like just everybody in the world could be a dentist. What I think people miss, though, and you did a good job of just drawing that out, is like, not everybody can tell an awesome story. Not everybody can make a beautiful website. Not everybody can make, you know, everything flow together the way that you do. And that is special, right? Like, there's a limited amount of people who are skilled in that way. And so I love that. And I love how you rally your team around that. And I'm sure that that really plays big parts in why you guys are successful with your clients. What are couple more questions, moving, kind of changing gears on you. How has your patients, like, thought process on marketing changed over the years? Do you feel like the younger dentists that are coming in are are looking at things differently, or is it kind of the same, but just from a different angle? Like what are you seeing across the board as you're working with maybe younger dentals or the millennial younger guys and ladies that are coming into the industry?
Yeah. I mean, from a real like macro level, and you probably know this, but I think it was 1976, the United States Supreme Court finally legalized marketing in dental. And so what was interesting before that is you could have a sign on the door, and it was actually specified the dimensions of it, you know, where it was like 3x12 or whatever sign on the door. And that was it. And so what was significant about that is it took about a generation or two for that mindset to work out of dentistry. So even in like the 80s and 90s, you'd have guys, you know, because that's, I got into dentistry in 2002, but hearing the stories and then working with some of those clients where they're like, man, I mean, I used to like trash talk guys at like study clubs, you know, and somebody walk in and be like, who's that guy? You know, man, he advertises in the yellow pages, full page ad, you know, and it insinuated that he wasn't a good clinician because he had to advertise. And so it took like, even when I got into it at 2002, marketing was kind of like, some people were like messing around with it, but there was still that stigma. Now, I mean, everybody coming out of school, it's like, why wouldn't I, you know, I've got $50,000-$60,000 set aside for year one marketing because this is my business. Like, why wouldn't I make that investment? And so I think on a macro kind of a lens, that's what we're seeing is probably in the last 15 years, the first generation coming out that has no stigma, no hangups, has the money, has the value there to actually do it. So I think we're seeing some cool stuff, man. I mean, we're one of the, you know, top startup agencies in the country, and like, they're fun, man. I mean, what they're building, their vision, like they're taking risks on building things that are different, taking the environment into consideration as part of the experience, like, you know, being more consumer centric versus just clinically centric. And then all that spills out, obviously, into the digital space and, of course, TikTok and Reels and social and all the things. But I think from a macro lens, that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, I agreed. And I think one of the big differences that I've noticed is, so you had dentists in general are not big social media people, if you've noticed that. Like just people who are currently owners and been owners for maybe the last 5 to 10 years, they don't personally post on social media. They don't engage right as much. But what I've noticed is the younger generation now that's coming in, they grew up on social media. Like they were handed phones when they were super young and jumped on social media, probably had a Facebook page, probably have an Instagram page. And I actually had an interview with Dr. Mackey, and she actually works for a DSO, and she has built her personal brand. And she, between all the social media platforms, she has about 1 million followers. And I had a really, really good conversation with her. What are your thoughts on like personal brand and that side of the coin?
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought this up because I'm going to shoot a question back to you. I think it's not one of these like good, bad, right or wrong. However, I think if you can leverage your personal brand, it's just gonna put an X factor on the growth, the reach, the influence, because everybody wants to know their clinician and their healthcare advisor, you know, professional. And so the brands that are doing that, it's just like, I mean, it's like putting a exponent, you know, on what they're doing. It's just multiplying that. When we started Studio 88, we actually built out joshuascott.com first. Yeah. And which was like counterintuitive, but I didn't want to be like, hey, next great dental marketing company, you don't know us, but come check us out. And I had a lot of relationships from 12 years previously. And it was like, hey, people do business with people they trust. And so let's build that. And the first 6 years of this, I was really, really active on social media. And so in Studio 88 kind of grew into their own. What happens to me, which I see happen to a ton of dentists, especially in startup phases, they're all over social media, but then all of a sudden the practice starts growing, they get busy, and then they're like, they're gone, they're MIA, you know? And the last like 18, 24 months for me have been really difficult, man, to keep up with it. I'm going to shoot this back to you because what I've been really impressed with you in the last, I don't know if it's been the last year, but 6 to 8 months, 10 months, you have made an absolute intentional decision to like invest in social media and your personal brand. So yeah. I'd love to hear just a little bit about that. I know this is my interview, but I want to
I appreciate that. Yeah, I've been playing around and I had to overcome some. I personally don't like social media. Like I just personally don't enjoy it. I don't think I'm like, why do people care what I'm eating for lunch today? Right. That's always been my perspective. But let me approach this from the dental side and then I'll work into why I built my personal brand. So it's very interesting. So I was talking with Dr. Mackey. I was asking her like, how many new patients do you get a month? Like how much time are you spending? And how many new patients a month are you getting from that? And she, and it wasn't a ton of new patients, right? Because she really has a national brand. So I was fascinated with this, like time versus, you know, the number of new patients that you're actually getting from it. And she's into it more for, and she told me, she was straight up, she was like, I really enjoy educating people. There's a whole side of the business that I'm going to build around education. That's why I'm doing it. It's not to generate new patients. So I said, okay, that makes sense then why you're doing that. But I think a lot of dentists think that, well, if I build my personal brand, it'll build my business. I think that's true to a point, like locally. Yeah. But if you go and look at a lot of these guys that are huge, I mean, millions of followers, they'll have like one practice and that one practice is doing good, but it's not a scalable thing where you can like, oh, I want to open up hundreds of locations. But you can sell where the play is. You can sell toothbrushes. You can sell toothpaste. You can sell different things, products. And I know dentists don't typically think that way, right? Like you know, that's not the normal business model, but there is a play there for sure. If you decide to go down that road where I think the big opportunity is, and I would consume this content like crazy. And I know the dentist would as well. What if like a CEO of a DSO created like a TikTok or an Instagram and they used it for recruiting, right? And they say, okay, I'm just going to show you what it's like to work here. And I'm just going to give you behind the scenes what it's like to be in a DSO. And I'm a CEO of you know this company or a CEO or whatever, right? And they documented like their days. That would be, to me, that would be an amazing, amazing opportunity. I think people are still, dentistry's still pretty conservative. So I don't think we'll see that anytime soon. But maybe in the next couple of years, we might see somebody pop up and do that. Now, why did I start doing building my personal brand was... I really enjoy like the marketing side of what we do. Like I'm like you, like I love it. And so I was just like, I want to see if I can just build my personal brand. I want to see if I can build content that will help other marketers or help other people build their agencies or help other people in the dental industry build their companies. And so then I just started at first I was like, you know what? I'm going to approach this from the entrepreneur angle. And that's really wide, right? And then I'm like, you know, I'm going to narrow it down and I'm just going to focus on the marketing agency and I'm just going to document. So I don't spend a ton of time in it. Like I'm not spending, you know, hours and hours and hours every single day on it, but I do intentionally like document my day. Like before I jumped in here, I took a quick picture, you know what I mean? I'm going to split that in to something that, hey, I shot a podcast with Josh today. And some of it, and it's just lessons like, and for me, it's like, it helps me really galvanize the thoughts and the things that I'm doing day to day and bring them into like a 30-second video. You know what I mean? So that's why I've been doing that. But I would love your thoughts on like, would you guys build out somebody's personal brand? Is that something you guys would focus on or is that?
Yeah, we've done that a lot over the past 24 months, honestly, because I think people have seen what we've done. And we haven't really got outside of dental. We still focus on dental, but we have a whole division of the company that we call brands, where it's not dental practices, but it's dental brands. So, I mean, we've done work for a dental construction company, a dental interior designer, consultants, courses, speakers, like
that's so cool.
All that type of stuff. But man, you said like, here's case in point. You said something, it might've been this weekend. It was just in the last couple of days. It might've been late last week, but you were talking about being the difference between being a 7-figure versus 8-figure company. And you were talking about you actually like taking a step back. Like it was about hiring really good people that go do what they need to do. And it wasn't you putting out all the fires and like, it wasn't creating this like massive sense of urgency and like, oh my gosh, you know, for you. And it hit me like really in the right spot because that's been us the last couple of years, man. We've had to make some like kind of big hires And sometimes that gets scary, you know, and you're like, is this, I don't know, is it all going to blow up? Like, who knows? Yeah. And when you said that, I was like, it was confirmation. It was like, no, no, no. Like, we're on the right road, because that's what's happened is we've made some big hires. They have changed my life as a business owner. Yeah. And so like your brand did that. I think you're completely accurate in saying it's not, if you're looking at it through the lens of new patients, which is like what sometimes like dental practices, I'm like, stop. It's not all about new patients all the time. Yeah. Like, you know, when they're like, it's butts in the chair. I'm like, I understand the ROI that you're wanting. It's also a very crass way of looking at marketing. So like the personal brand, I don't know that it's about getting new patients in the door. For me, I would tell you, I would advise you, it's about your future. It's about future opportunities. Are you going to practice chair side for, you know, next 30 years? Great. Like, who cares? For me, I know investment in my personal brand is my 10-year future Josh self will look back and say, thank you for doing that, because it opened up these doors.
It opens doors.
That's why I'm doing it.
Yeah. I love that, man. So I'm going to break down a dichotomy for you that I think will really touch on that last point that you made about, you know, why dentists focus on that lead gen side. Number one, they're analytical, right? So you can't, it's like, what's the lifetime value of a brand? It's like, that's so hard to define, right? Like and dentists want analytics, like they just want it, right? So, but let me give you this dichotomy, because I've found myself traveling through this, right? So when you get started in anything, you start anything, everybody's like lead gen, lead gen, lead gen. And the reason I think that people are so lead gen strong is because when you start, you have to have leads, and you have to have them this month. I can't have the best logo in the world and no leads, because then I close my doors in 30 days, right? And I think dentists are the same exact way. When they open up a new location, or they just hire a new associate, or they do a de novo, or they make an acquisition, usually it's like, I got to have people in now. Like if I don't get these people in now, I won't be able to keep my doors open. And so what ends up happening, though, I think the part that people miss, and this is the part that you guys are so good about talking about, and you just hit on it, is that branding's like the bigger or the long-term play, right?
Right.
And you can't tie an ROI to it. Like if you could tie an ROI to it and a lifetime value to it, then everybody would do it and we'd just systematize it, right? And it's not that simple, because it's a feeling. It's a vibe that you're giving people as they travel to your website. But the lifetime value of branding is huge, right? Like it's so massive. But they're at the same time, you still need new customers to survive. So it's like you want both, and you want to implement both. But I think it's the timing and where you're also at on your journey too, right? Like when I was younger, I just needed customers. Like I just had to survive. Like I didn't care. Like who cares? We'll update the website later, right? But now that I'm older, and now that I've figured out that side a little bit more, now it's like, okay, how do I want to present ourselves, and how do I want to be out there in the space and those kind of things? And I think you did a really good job of tackling it earlier, because your brain naturally works that way, right? So you kind of reverse engineered into it, which is amazing. What are your thoughts on that as I say that?
Yeah, you're 100% right. And I think it's not a like either. I get probably my position in the space is, guys, this isn't either or, it's more both and. Like, short term, you know, so we have like aggressive SEO and digital ad campaigns, right? Because short term, we need butts in the chair, 100%. I also would encourage them. I'm like, hey, don't forget that great businesses are built over the next 10 years. So like, what's that play? And a lot of times I'll even tell people, if it comes up a conversation, I'm like, look, here's probably how you're going to think about marketing. Year one, you're going to look at everything we've done and services and your startup or whatever and go, yeah, like I like what we've done. I feel like it's working. Like, you know, the year two, there's definitely like some momentum happening, man. We're really like, you know, feeling this. Year three, there's probably so much momentum. You're like, I may have to turn all this off, you know? And I think dentistry, the really cool thing is we've got a very short cycle to go from startup to community dominance in about 3 years, if you do it right. That's like insanely short. Like there's not a lot of spaces professionally you can go in and do that. But yet sometimes we get so derailed because it's a 3 to 6 month kind of perspective of this has to happen. So we focus on one side of it, but we don't build it for the long term. So I think that's kind of where I'm coming from is, guys, you got a chance to be the number one leader in your community in about 3 years if you play it right.
That's awesome. All right, last question. So how, I had a conversation yesterday with somebody. It's like, so we have inflation, we have, you know, all this crazy stuff going on in the economy, and everybody's like recession, recession, recession. And usually when you say recession enough times, a recession comes, right? Are you guys making any plans around that? Or what do you think is going to happen in dental? Like, have you thought about that? Or is that something that hasn't been on your mind?
Man, really good question. You've had about three of these that have stopped me here. It's on my list. I have a partner in the business, and it's on my list to chat with him about. We were supposed to yesterday and just didn't end up with the time. Because I don't, Gary, to be honest, I don't know. Here's some of my thoughts. I've been through about two of these in the last, like the two serious ones in the past 22 years. Yep. I can say fairly certainly dentistry has been very recession proof.
Yeah.
I've watched that even through COVID. I mean, we had the moment where it was like, oh crap, but everything's bounced back. So I say that I'm really grateful we're in a profession that has been fairly recession proof. I don't know, man. Like this economic climate ever since COVID, it's like, we've all tried to make predictions and graphs and all the things and play it out. And, you know, and
the market, we're going into a recession. Oh, no, I mean, houses are going to double in price. That's right. Like it's just exact opposite of everything happened. Yeah,
I know. And obviously, I think there's some like real logic to it. I think when we get some perspective, we'll see like, hey, that much stimulus dumped in creates this, like you can't avoid that and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. The American consumer and the public is also so optimistic and bullish in psychology. I don't know, man. I mean, I would love to hear your thoughts because I've been asking myself, as a business leader, do I need to, like, how do we need to look at this?
Well, yeah. So I had the same exact situation. So last week, my business partner and I sat down and we were like, all right, we need to talk about the coming recession. Like, what's this going to look like? What does it look like for dental? What does it look like for us? How do we plan for it and make sure that we're protecting our team, make sure that we're protecting you know, all of our investments, all those kind of things. So the way I look at it is, if you go back and look at the numbers, general dentistry is actually extremely consistent. Like even in down, very little wiggle on huge down markets, where you get a lot of pushback or a lot of huge dips is in the specialty side of things.
Yeah.
And so if your agency is loaded with specialty, then yeah, there's a potential for a lot of people to go out. And in 2008, what actually happened is when we had that pullback, everybody was doing like the hot thing back then was not DSOs. It was boutique, right? So like, we're just going to open an office and just do this one service, veneers. That's it. You know what I mean? Or Invisalign. That's it. We're not going to do anything else. And at the time it was working because everybody was pulling money out of their houses and everybody was equity rich, right? And HELOC rich. And then when the market turned and people lost those houses, like that dried up and those boutiques like shut down. And specialty has some of that, right? Like if you're, and the way I look at it is, this is more of a business model point of view of it. If you look at general dentistry, it's a recurring model, right? It's like marketing. Every month you got people paying you money, right? And you have this MRR coming in and you're building that out. Well, the specialty side is a sales model. It's not a recurring model. Yeah. It's not, you're not getting people back in. You're not getting $1,500 a year from every single patient. And then you have a way to get them to come back every 6 months. You're just like, hey, we're just selling one time. And if we close half of our cases this month, we're killing it. And if we miss one or two of those, then we have a bad month. Well, if that dries up for 1 or 2 months, you literally don't have a business anymore, right? Like your business has dried up. And so I think thinking through it through a business lens rather than a clinical lens can help people. Okay, well, how can we protect ourselves against that? So if I was in specialty, that's how I would be thinking of it, or GP. So
Yeah. No, you're right. Those early 2000s, man, I remember that whole cosmetic like boom, right? And everybody's adding, before that was everybody was a family dentist and then they added cosmetic to their name. So it was like such and such family and cosmetic dentist. And all the guys that were really leveraged on cosmetic, that 07, 08 recession, those were the ones that were hit hard. So you're 100% right. Yeah, I think it's, I think it's interesting. It's interesting that we're sitting here going when the recession comes because already had one quarter. Technically, when we hit July 1st, or they'll probably announce on July 7th or whatever, we've had two quarters, which will be an official recession. But you and I both know it's coming. But man, last thing, when COVID hit, I don't know, I stay bullish on marketing. I mean, and it's not just because it's my profession. I really do believe those are the opportunities. When people pull back, when recessions happen, when shutdowns happen, man, the practices, I knew this would happen. The practices that communicated their way through COVID are the ones that are killing it right now. And the ones that tell me, well, you know, ever since COVID, we've had trouble with new patients. I'm like, no. That's not the rest of the nation, man. So again, like, look at that marketing, reevaluate it. I think we'll have to help our clients make smart decisions with it, but there's opportunities to that will be there in it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's what the big guys are going to do. They're going to everybody's going to expand everybody's going to expand their footprint, right? It's time to move forward. And if you go back and look at recessions, every recession, there's huge companies that come out of it. Huge, every single one of them. And people are very intentional. So great job today, man. I don't get to talk like this with very many people, so I really appreciate this. This has been very refreshing for me. Our podcast, we don't normally talk about marketing because we bring in different experts. So this has been really fun for me. Thank you so much. If someone wants to contact you, Josh, how can they get a hold of you, get your help, get your services?
Yeah, best place for me personally over at Instagram at Joshua Scott. Hit me up. I still am in there checking all my DMs. I'll respond to you. Let me know you watched it, what you thought, ask questions or whatever. If you want to learn more about Studio 88, it's www.s8e8.com. Gary, let me just close with this last thought here.
Yeah.
We all watched post-COVID big companies, big DSOs, take advantage of that and get even bigger, from Amazon to probably the mid-sized small group in your community. And maybe you sat back and didn't take advantage of that. And it's not that, and maybe you're not big enough to, you know, you're like, hey, I'm not that big to make big moves, but you can still make moves. And as we get into this, you need to be asking, Gary, we made some recruiting moves post-COVID that I knew was going to happen. Like, what moves can you make? Because if you don't, if you're like, we're in a recession, you pull back, it's going to be that much harder to come out of it. So what moves can you make in the next year?
That's awesome, man. I 100% agree with that. Great job. Great job. And we will, can't wait to post this, man. Thank you so much for all of your candid answers.
Appreciate it, bro.